All right, and we are live. So thanks everybody for joining me. This is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com. And I'm joined today by Abel James. And Abel is the author of The Wild Diet. And he's just a really overall kind of cool guy that I got to know a little bit with an interview I did with him. He's a fellow mountain biker. And one day, Abel woke up, found himself fat, overweight, and sick from following all the advice that his doctors were giving him not to be fat, overweight, and sick. And it led him on a pretty interesting journey to discover some things about, you know, himself and helping other people live healthier lives. And so, yeah, just a really big, you know, a big guy in the natural food movement, the local born movement. And his book, The Wild Diet, I'll tell you, I haven't read a whole lot of nutrition books from cover to cover, but The Wild Diet was one that I did, and I really enjoyed the whole thing. So it was a really awesome book. I'm really excited to get Abel on and Abel to join me. And so Abel, how's it going, buddy?
Really well. Thanks for having me, James.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's my pleasure. And it's funny. We got hooked up on Twitter, and yeah, there was a mutual fan of ours who said, hey, you know, Fat Burning Man and Bike James should get together for a podcast. And so it was kind of funny. I wasn't really, you know, I'd heard of The Wild Diet, but I wasn't really aware of the Fat Burning Man and Abel James and all that. And then I started looking into it a little bit, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's pretty legit. Like, you know, what you're saying is pretty legit. And so, yeah, we reached out and we were able to set up a podcast between us. And, but yeah, you know, you've got a really successful podcast and a really, you know, big platform, a good platform for helping to spread this kind of natural living, you know, wild diet. And that's the thing, like The Wild Diet, the thing that I really liked about it was it went beyond just nutrition, and it really embraces more of like a lifestyle. Yeah. And so, you know, that's a real big thing. So, well, I guess, you know, people didn't tune in to hear me talk about The Wild Diet. They tuned in to hear you talk about it. And so I'll let you just kind of give us a little bit about your background and kind of what led you to this point. And then, yeah, we'll just kind of see where it goes from there. But I see we do have some people joining us live. And so you guys will see there's a little chat room that you guys, if you have any questions or comments or anything like that, you guys can post your message and I'll be able to relay it to Abel, and we'll see what we can get to you. So a little live interaction during the interview here, which makes it a little cooler. So, but yeah, so Abel, enough of me talking. Yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself and the wild diet.
Yeah, yeah, so I grew up in the middle of nowhere, and that took me on a crazy adventure where basically I was trying to pay off my loans, first real job and whatever, working in DC, all of a sudden working in a cubicle farm or whatever. And for the first time in my life, I had really good health insurance. And so, you know, my family has a history of putting on weight as you age, high blood pressure, thyroid problems, stuff like that. And so for me, being a health nut and an overachiever, I'd never really thought about a lot of that stuff before. Certainly not really diet, because I was always athletic and whatever. But so I went into the doctor's office and peed in a cup every week and got my blood drawn and looked at all these different biomarkers and asked the doctor, what should I do to prevent these things, you know, like as I age, as I'd like become an adult? And he said, well, you definitely have to eat less and exercise more, and you should probably cut out almost like all the fat in your diet. You want to take that out, replace it with whole grains. You also want to eat almost zero dietary cholesterol. So after really focusing on doing that for a while, every few weeks, every month, you know, it's a little softer around the middle. My face is starting to go out this way, right? And you can see the pictures in my book and my website. I looked like I was in my 40s, you know?
Yeah.
And basically like went straight from being young and athletic to like middle age, and started having a lot of issues like kidney stones. My thyroid was slowing down, my blood, lots of different problems that I was trying to prevent started to come to the fore. And then I came home one night and my apartment building was up in flames and I lost everything. And all I had was like the reflection of this old flabby dude in the mirror. And this wasn't because I was, you know, going out and being super unhealthy. It was like I was trying really hard to make this work or whatever. And I'm overweight, I'm fat, I'm sick, and I'm just like this isn't working anymore. And so I started digging around and basically did all the things that my doctor said would stop my heart, right? Like eating higher fat foods like chocolate, coconut, avocado, really, you know, fatty things that I'd been avoiding before, even though they're really healthy foods, and went back to just the things that made inherent sense to me. Like, what is it? How should humans live? And once I flipped that on its head and started doing some research into like cyclic ketogenic diets and the more like science behind it, I'm like, okay, screw it. This isn't working. I'm going to try this instead. And I lost like 20 pounds in just over a month and went from being, you know, flabby to totally different body composition, you know, back to being young and athletic. And that experience was so weird because I was just like, that wasn't hard. You know, that was like fun and easy. I wasn't starving myself. Like, why doesn't everyone know this and just do it? And so I started up my whole thing just to kind of say, you know, there's another way of doing this and it's way more fun. And it's a more like, it's long ball, right? Because I don't want to be old my whole life popping pills. Oh, I want to be young and like eating well and having fun. And so this, I think, you know, starting to put all the pieces together to come up with a better way. And I think we've got one, certainly better than popping pills.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. No, man, reading your story in your book and seeing those pictures, like you said, like, I mean, to see the picture of you sitting there playing your guitar that you have in the book and see the guy that I'm talking to right now, it just doesn't look like the same person. And, it's crazy, right? Yeah, you know, luckily I was turned on a little, sooner than most people to the whole, like, fat's not that bad. Like I was, there was a guy named Dan Duchesne from way back in the day.
Yeah.
He had the Body Opus diet.
Body Opus. I remember that.
Okay. Yeah. 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 And you had, Marie DePasquale. I think he's still kicking around in the anabolic diet, but so you had these like fringe diets in the fitness and in bodybuilding world and these kooks. For lack of a better term, who were saying like, no, fats are what you know, to get lean.
36 eggs a day, baby.
right. Yeah. That it's not the low fat isn't it. And so, I didn't quite get, you know, as far down the road as that, but, you know, just kind of the, when you look at like what they tell us we need to do to be healthy. And then you look at like what you actually need to, like what humans have been doing to be healthy for so long.
Right.
And it's so frustrating. Have you read the book, Natural Born Heroes?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That was a really awesome book. It's really funny how all these things come together in your life at the same time. Somebody told me to read that book and I read that book and right around the same time I start talking to you and I'm reading Wild Diet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, this is just really crazy. And for those that don't know, Natural Born Heroes was a book written by Chris McDougall, who also wrote the book Born to Run.
Great book.
Was, I mean, probably one of the most influential books on the fitness world in the last few decades.
Yeah.
I mean, it did more to save people's feet and rest their bodies than anything else. And honestly, what's funny is, I was listening to that audiobook on a trip out to Southern California, and I kept hearing him talk about how all this unnatural stuff that's happening with the feet when you run was jacking up runners' bodies. And I had the thought, well, if that's happening with running, like what is happening with cycling shoes where we're putting our shoes in these stiff coffins with these carbon soles and these little tiny attachments? Like that's so far removed from how the foot is intended to work. And anyways, not to get too far off on that subject, but that book actually inspired a lot of my thoughts for like, well, why don't we pedal more? Like we, you know, if running naturally is good for us, why don't we pedal naturally and look at like how to pedal naturally? But so Awa, you're a fellow mountain biker and flat pedal guy. So we talked a little bit about your journey with that. But that book, Natural Born Heroes, is looks back on like what we were able, like what human beings at one time were able to do. Like the heroes aren't born, that we all are natural born heroes. And it's a mindset and a physical traits that you can train. And like the ancient Greeks had it down to an art form. And it's something that we've lost, we've gone. But that was the idea of the book. And that's what I kept getting from the wild diet was like in your book and the wild lifestyle that you have is that, you know, man, if we just unleash the natural born heroes that we have inside of us, everything else takes care of itself. I mean, is that pretty much it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's the coolest thing, right? Because it wasn't like I took on this crazy diet and then like forced my body into doing this thing. It's like, no, your body wants to be super fit, full of energy. We always used to be. You don't see a fat deer, right? Like out in the wild. You don't see a fat lion or whatever. It's just we're so far from where we started as humans in terms of the way that we live our lives, everything from sleep, the lights, what we're eating, pollution, all this other stuff. And as soon as you kind of like take all of that stuff away that doesn't fit with the genes that we come here with, and you instead, you go outside, you get some sun, you go on some adventures, you train a really powerful mind, and your body responds and just like snaps back to what it was supposed to be. So I went from that fat old dude in the picture playing guitar from following the wrong advice really well, right, to following the right advice really well. And my body was like, bam, I like that, and went back to what I was supposed to be, right? And that's so, I want people to see that as a, you know, I'm not special. I think everyone should look and feel great, right? When you get your body in order, it starts to heal itself. You go back to this really healthy weight, healthy energy level, and you want to go out there and move. So you just follow these natural intuitions that are there. They've just been kind of like covered up by all the noise and in media. And you know, one of the reasons I got so fat is because I was reading all those running magazines, you know, same things like the biking magazines or whatever. You don't realize they're selling you something instead of educating you. So I was conditioned as a consumer instead of actually knowing what was going on.
Yeah, man. That's one of the things. It's not, you know, when I say this, it sounds evil, but it's just as long as you're aware of it. Industries don't exist to protect your best interests. Industries exist to make money.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's fine. It's fine. But just when you're not aware of that, you know, when you're trusting these people to give you the right advice because you think that they're looking out for your best interest, not the fact like, advertising dollars and you know, where's the money going for research? Oh, it's going to, you know, sugary drinks for, you know, you know what I mean? Like all that stuff. So, but yeah, no, man, I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, I tell people, all the time, like, I think, you know, I like to read history books. I like to read like, you know, Caesar and Spartacus and Hannibal and all those guys. And man, reading what those guys were able to do, physically do, and then you look at the modern person. I mean, like when we look around, what we think of as average, you know, like if they weren't historical books that we were told, no, this is history, and you told someone, hey, this is what somebody did, you'd call it a fairy tale. You know what right. I mean? Like if you told somebody about Caesar's campaigns in France against the Gauls and them having to march for like 18 hours to get from point A to point B, you think they were stopping every few hours to, you know, or every 30 minutes to do a
goo packs.
Right, man. And it's like, and when they showed up, they had to pitch camp and they may have to fight. And it's like, you know, they say that it would take a team of Olympic athletes to row a Viking warship. And they were putting fleets of those things in, you know, out. And, you know, we would call it fairy tales. And we don't realize like how degraded the human has become because of how unnatural our lifestyles are. And we don't realize how much these lifestyles hold us back, man. So, but that brings me to one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was the idea of being able to fuel yourself, as an athlete. Like I said, so you're a mountain biker, you're an outdoor adventure athlete, you know, you get out there and get after it. And so I guess just, you know, give us an idea of like, you know, what's a typical, like, how long do you go out? Like, what do you, you know, I guess just kind of give us an idea, like on the wild diet for you personally, you know, how do you as an endurance athlete, when you're doing endurance stuff, like how do you get by without a, you know, a camelback full of sugary goos to fuel your efforts?
Well, it's so funny, right? Because you have to ask what your goals are. And I think so many of us are sold the ideal that like, you should do exactly what the elite Olympic athlete should do all the time. And if you're honest about it, like most of us are going out because it's fun, right? You want to be healthy. You want to be lean. You want to keep the extra weight off. You want to be, you want to be in good health. And so we're doing it for a totally different reason than, you know, an athlete is. You can't optimize everything at the same time. If you're like an Olympian, you are not optimizing for longevity. Right. I think last time I saw it, it's like if you're in the NFL, your life expectancy is like 52 years. Right.
Yeah.
And if you're not in the NFL and you kind of like sit around all the time, your life expectancy is what, like 75, almost 80 years. And so I think a lot of us get the wrong idea about what it means to fuel that way. And there are a lot of like ex-athletes or even current athletes who get diabetes because of all of that sugar, right? Like your body isn't meant to be sucking down goos and having even, you know, tons of bananas and all this other stuff. It's if you're going out in the woods or whatever, going out for a mountain bike ride, it's ridiculous to carry the amount of stuff that most people say that you need with you. So when I used to race cross country mountain biking growing up, I trained with a guy who was way better than me. He just came from a family of beasts and they were some of the top in North America. And we'd go out, you know, we'd do 50 miles, 70 miles, sometimes even like pushing 100. And we'd have like a can of tuna fish. Right? We just like in the middle of the ride, we just, you know, sit down and be like, okay, I could use a little fuel. And we didn't know any better. You know, we didn't have any money for any of that stuff, any of that goo. It's just like our bodies worked. And yeah, you might be hungry sometimes, but then the hunger goes away and your body like kind of adapts. And there's something to be said for being, you know, being like one of those soldiers where they just had to survive. Right. It's like, and people before that, you know, they would go and run 100 miles in indigenous tribes with like an ostrich egg full of water. That's all they had. So even the idea that you need to constantly hydrate and all this stuff is a little bit overstated, I think. Right. We think that we can't do it unless we have all these perfect conditions. But the reality is, it's like I used to lead trips when I was in college out. You know, we'd go camping for like 6 days and I'd lead a lot of people who had never done that before, right? And teach them how to poop in the woods and cook with a fire and all that stuff.
Pattern down.
Yeah. And at the beginning, everyone's just like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to eat? You know, I usually eat six times a day. I'm going to have a hamburger and all this stuff. But like over the course of a couple of days, you get used to just, you know, you snack on a few nuts, maybe have some carrots or like a little bit of cheese or something, but you're hiking all day, you know, you're going like 15 miles on treacherous terrain. There's no option. There's no like in and out right over there for you to just like get a freaking Slurpee and a big hamburger. It's like, no, at the end of the day, we'll sit down, we'll make camp and we'll have a big feast, and it's probably going to be a dehydrated bean burrito or something, but it's going to taste really good because your body wants it. It's the time to eat. And you know what? Like by the end of those trips, people survive and they're way stronger than they were before. And they're able to run on fat instead of constantly fueling with sugar. And that's one of the secrets that I definitely talk about in my book and my podcast, Fat Burning Man, right? It's like you can run on fat and do incredible things. And like Chris McDougall talks about that a lot in his books too. Like we're capable of a lot more than the media messaging tells us we are.
Yeah. I know that's the thing, man. Like I think as great as sports science is, it limits us in so many ways because it tries to put us in boxes and it says that's impossible based on what we know, what science knows, that's impossible. And there's this show, Stan Lee's Superhumans. It's on Netflix.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he goes around and finds these people with these crazy powers. And it's almost comical. At least once or twice an episode, they take somebody to see a scientist to test them. And the scientist is just like, that's impossible, blah, blah, blah. It's impossible, impossible. And it's like, man, I feel sorry for him after a while because they're always sitting there going, well, this, I can't explain it, you know? Well, I'm going to have to, you know? And it's like, so... The idea of science telling us, well, this is what we found, it gets taken too far and it becomes like this box it tries to place us in. So they do a study that finds that, like, you know, yeah, supplementing with, you know, goo or whatever, blah, 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 increases performance. But it's like you're saying, like one, elite athletes, the context isn't really there, you know, just in just because it shows that doesn't mean that's the only way, I guess, right, is the thing. And that's the thing that you're trying to help people understand is like, look, you know, you can't, I run up against this all the time. Like I can't argue with results, right? If you're going to tell me, man, I have great results with this and I do my goos and have great results and I really, okay, that's fine. You stick with it. But the problem is there's a lot of people that don't, a lot of people that don't, and they don't understand that there is actually another option there. You know, they think that something's wrong with them. And that they just have to like try hard, like you were when you're trying to get better, following the proper advice, you know. But you know, telling people, like, hey, there's another option here. And so that was another thing that really, I've always leaned this way ever since. I've never been hungry in the mornings. You know, we were told you got to eat breakfast. And three, you know, I came out the same thing every 6 hours, man. I remember having my watch set for every 3 hours so that I'd be able to take in food. And so I came up during that time and I did that, and it never really felt right. It never felt natural to me. And then I read The Warrior Diet, which I'm sure you have read.
I had Ori on the show. He's cool. He's like a true artist, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Well, for people that don't know, Ori, how do you say his last name?
Hoffmeckler, I think.
Hoffmeckler, yeah. Super cool guy. But he was intermittent fasting, which is now kind of a buzzword, and right. You know, people know more about it. But back when The Warrior Diet came out, again, it was like the body opus thing, the crazy people talking about fat on the fringes. He was the crazy guy on the fringe saying, no, you don't need to eat, bro. You don't need to eat. You can skip food all day long and just feast like crazy at night and do exactly opposite of what they're telling you you need to do, which is eat a bunch of big breakfast and eat less at night.
Yeah.
And so the fasting thing, man, like that's, I really like to get just kind of your experience and your thoughts and just kind of what, you know, what you found to be the benefits of fasting and stuff. So I think a lot of us are just so afraid of going without food that the more stories they hear of like, no, bro, you don't need to eat all the time, the better. So fasting, man, that's give us the lowdown on that.
Fasting is cool. It does so many things for your body, especially for men. It doesn't always work as well for women, but for men, it's this thing where it's like your body responds and is like, goes into this different mode where it's like, oh, I got to get stronger now, right? And I've got to be more resilient. There are a lot of different biochemical and scientific reasons why a lot of that's true that we don't have to get into right now, but mostly it's like, I haven't eaten anything today except for fat in my coffee, and it's you know, past 2 o'clock, I've done like my sixth interview or something. And pretty much every day like that, I'm standing up doing all these interviews, and I don't eat until the evening. And it used to be when I was fueling all the time, I kind of had this constant source of glucose, and a lot of people experience that. And if you don't get food and if you don't get sugar every few hours, you get cranky, you get hangry, right? You like get a little bit of brain fog. You're like, I gotta eat right now. I'm pissed off, right? But that's just because you've gotten used to eating all the time and keeping that fuel up. When you go without it, like I was saying before, you go out and you ride 50 miles or whatever and you have a can of tuna fish, your body is, you know, you only have a can of tuna fish. It's not like you're fasting. You're just being something that can exist in the situation that you're in. And eating all the time is a luxury. And you go to other parts of the world, right? Like we've been traveling for the past year, just experiencing what it's like to live in other places. And the idea that you have to eat 6 meals a day, like most people in the world can't afford to do that, right? They can't afford to do it. And so the idea that you can't do that or that you're going to die if you go without food for a period of time is ridiculous. So for me, you know, when I started experimenting with intermittent fasting, it was interesting from a body composition perspective because, you know, I've done marathons and stuff like that. And I, you know, keeping muscle is important to me. Like it feels good. I have good energy. I feel strong when I have it. And I was afraid that, you know, all my muscles would fall off if I didn't eat all the time. And that's what you're told, right? By a lot of people. Yeah. But I started doing deadlifts at the same time or restarted doing deadlifts and a little bit of progression. And I put on like 10 pounds of lean mass as I started fasting. And I was like, well, that's pretty interesting. And all of a sudden, you know, in the morning, I realized that I didn't actually get hungry until I started eating. And so why, you know, it's, I hate being hungry. It's, I'm a foodie and it's the worst, like just thinking about food all the time. And I'm like, wait a second. So I can go, you know, half the day, maybe even more than that without thinking about food and just like doing my thing, going out for an adventure, doing some work, and then come back and only eat and be hungry for like a few hours out of the day, you know, when nothing else is going on. It's just time to feast in the evening. That's the best thing ever from a lifestyle perspective. It's like the amount of time that it takes to cook breakfast, clean up after yourself, get that morning snack, do the same thing for lunch, or you know, you drive, go to a restaurant or something like that, you drive back, and then for dinner, it's like you're thinking about food and you're dealing with food all the time. So what fasting does I don't even always call it fasting, right?
It's not really fasting. That's the thing. I guess we should probably explain, because, you know, I was surprised when I read the Warrior Diet that it's like, well, it's not that you can't eat. So fasting may not be the right word. So yeah, go ahead and just kind of explain a little bit more about, like, you know, when we say fasting, it's not always going without food. There's some parameters. Yeah.
You know, it's not starving yourself. It's just the idea that, like, sometimes you're under eating, you're not eating huge meals, and other times it's okay to eat. And that's the time that you do eat. And for me, from a lifestyle perspective, usually my wife too, we eat in the evenings. That's our big meal. Kind of makes sense. You know, if you go back to what it's like to be an ancient human or indigenous or whatever, you're not cooking all day. You're maybe snacking on a few things. So we might have, you know, some bone broth or some, like, raw veggies or something like that, or some nuts or whatever, kind of snack, especially in the after noon or leading up to dinner. We might have a little bit of whatever it is, but we're not force feeding ourselves in the morning. But the idea that you have to call it fasting if you're under eating or you're not really eating that many meals is kind of, it's just a symptom of how far we are from the way that we used to eat. If you look at any wild animal, right, which we used to be at one point, they're not eating all day long. And the only animals that you see that are fat really are domesticated dogs and cats and us. And so that says something, right? It's like wolves are not eating six meals a day.
You have your time of plenty and time of not so much. It's just kind of, nature does that. It's funny, the human body in general seems to like some noise.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't like a constant, steady, just everything the same every day. Yeah, man. It's not what we're made to do. But So I guess so within that context though, I guess just as kind of as far as, like, you know, as an endurance athlete, like, if you're getting ready to go for a bike ride, or what do you find if you do need to eat a few more carbs? I think that's kind of the thing that a lot of people who consider themselves to be, you know, endurance athletes run up against I'm going to need a few more carbs than the normal person. And so how do you kind of adjust, you know, what's kind of some real time, real life hacks that people can use to adjust for that?
Yeah. So if you're keeping your weight down, you have a way better, especially for mountain biking, you have a way better power to weight ratio. Right. Sure. So having lower body fat by doing things like fasting or avoiding sugar most of the time can give you a big advantage. At the same time, it might reduce your performance, your output, while you're training. So one of the cool things you can do is train low and then compete high. So for me, I like self-defense and martial arts as well. And so Krav Maga was one that I was doing when I was back in Austin about a year ago, and it had like a belt test, and I think it was 7 hours long of just getting, basically they just attack you, right?
Hours.
And you have to go through all these drills, throwing people around, people coming after you, whatever. And so it's mental toughness, and you have to keep yourself going. And I did not fast that day, right? It's like I woke up in the morning, I had a relatively big thing of like eggs with cheese, so it was substantial, with a big old sweet potato, right? So when you are used to kind of training low with your glycogen stores around the area of bonking, for most people, you start, your body mobilizes fat more efficiently, so you can run for longer, you can do more stuff. And then when you actually have the carbs, especially pre and post workout, you feel your oats, man. It's like, so if I have a sweet potato, I feel like it's rocket fuel. You know, I feel amazing. And so that's one of the interesting things that happens with your body, right? Because it adapts to anything. So keeping the body fat down and then combining it with topping off your glycogen stores around the time that you're training is a really, really powerful way to make sure that your performance isn't really suffering. In fact, you have a leg up on a lot of other people because you're able to use those carbs as that super fuel. Whereas people who are running on the goose all the time are just kind of, they're used to it. They've got all this glycogen or whatever. And when they bonk hard. And if you're used to being fat adapted and you bonk, it can still happen or whatever, but it's not really the same thing because your body is using much higher percentage of mobilized free fatty acids in your body to fuel your energy and your brain. So you don't get that whole like mental crash that a lot of people get. So for me also, when I was doing the more sugar fueled or the carb fueled sports, the energy, it goes up and down. And yeah, you really, you know, I would get cramps a lot of the time. It was my mental fortitude wasn't nearly what it is now. I didn't have that energy. It was, you know, you have that goo and you're like, you're way up and then you're way down. And you got to keep it up the whole time. And it's problematic. It's expensive. And it also, for most people, is completely unnecessary. Can you maybe shave a little bit of time off your performance by having this high octane fuel all the time? Maybe, but if you get injured and you keep eating that way, or you keep trying to like follow all those carb cravings or whatever, most runners are injured every single year, bikers too, right? Like, if that will offset it really, really quickly, because you're going to be following those cravings, might put on some extra body fat. That's definitely going to slow you down. So you want to optimize your health at the same time as you're doing all of this, because that's long ball, right? You're usually doing this because you want to be an athlete forever, not because you want to finish one race really, really quickly. Because a lot of times it's just a recipe for injury.
Yeah. No, I think there's you had a couple really good points. I mean, one you made a couple times, like sport, people forget sport, especially on the high end, has nothing to do with health.
Yeah.
And so trying to emulate what the best in the world are doing at the highest levels, it doesn't always make sense from a health perspective. And so again, it goes back to like, well, so what are you saying, Abel, if everybody fasted in the Tour de France, that they would be faster? You know, right. I mean, like, that's one of these ridiculous things I get with some of the things that I throw out there. Oh, you know, if the pros were, it's like, no, that's not what we're saying. You're missing the point. But the other thing I think was a really good point there, and again, I think it's something that mountain biking in particular struggles with. When I ran track, you know, we had training shoes and we had racing shoes. Like, you knew that you were going to run slower in training. Mm-hmm. And then you were going to have specialized equipment and specialized things that you were going to do. Like, we didn't pull out all of the stops for training. You know, we only pulled out all of the stops for racing. And right. I think that's one of the problems that mountain bikers run into. Like, are you familiar with Strava, the phenomenon of Strava?
Yeah.
Online. Yeah. So again, like, people are constantly timing, you know, every ride they go out on, they have to be on, they have to be, you know, using the they have to be eating and using the equipment. Again, it's one of the reasons, again, not to keep going back to this, people laugh, I can't talk about anything not relating it back to flat pedals. But again, like, I don't understand why, you know, people can't use flats in training and clip. Like, again, it's like understanding that, like, one thing that's going to let you move more naturally, you know, yeah, you may not perform as well at the high levels of competition, but it's the same thing with the goos, you know, that I thought was really good. That, like, yeah, people think about, okay, if I'm training and I'm training fasted, there's a difference between training and rate, you know, like, your performance. And so, like, trying to understand that, like, you know, training low and competing high, like you said, is going to give you the best of both worlds ultimately. But it's being able to mentally, the ego, you know, tell the ego to shut the hell up.
Yeah.
And that it's okay to be a little bit slower on this ride so that you can be faster when it counts.
Exactly. So
yeah. No, man, that was really good. I really like that explanation of it, 'cause I think that's a really good, middle ground, I guess, for it. So yeah, that's why I ask you the questions, man. So, cool. It was good, man. I'm learning a lot just from, like I said, your book was good, and just getting to talk to you in general about this stuff is awesome. So cool. So I guess with that said, one of the really big popular things in mountain biking now is this thing called enduro racing. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the format, but it's like a multi-day stage format. So you'll start out, you know, you'll hit one bit of track for, you know, 5 to 10 minutes. You get timed on that, and then you gotta pedal and transfer your way to the next section. You're not necessarily getting timed on that, so you don't have to go super fast, but you got to get there, and then you got to hit it hard again. And you'll have anywhere from like 3 to 5 stages over the course of the day, and then you'll have to do that for, you know, 2 days in a row. Some of them can be a little bit longer, but that's generally the format that you're looking at. So you know, with that in mind, so again, like the idea of like, you know, training low and competing high. So, you know, we know that we're going to try to eat a little bit more on those mornings. I guess what would you recommend as far as like, you know, things, because if you're out there on the trail all day, you might start to get hungry. And like you said, that's not the time to force fasting. So mm-hmm. what do you find works? What do you kind of recommend, knowing that everybody's a little different? But yeah. if somebody, you know, does need some fuel for an all day thing, instead of throwing just a banana in their pack, like what, you know, what do you recommend?
Yeah. So don't be afraid of fats. Things, one of my favorite things to fuel up on that's really easy to take around, especially instead of goo, is like coconut cream, coconut manna, sometimes it's called. And that stuff, it's nut butters and a lot of those things can be really, really good. But things like sweet potatoes, rice, and other clean carbs are definitely doing your health a favor. And so different people are all over the place, right? Like, so there's this one guy who has a build like mine, add 30% muscle and then add like 6 inches, and he's a Viking, right? His name's Chaz. He was on my show. So he talks about, you know, I helped him train down to 3% body fat for a physique competition. And what one of the ways that you can get there is by cycling carbs. So sometimes he'll have like 400 carbs, grams of carbs a day, right? But other, while you're training, you're kind of keeping it low and you're keeping your glycogen relatively depleted. So fueling up in the days around a super intense event like that with carbs and during that time, focusing on basically topping off all of your glycogen can give you a huge leg up. Because yeah, if your goal is performance, then you want to get some carbs in, like running with a good amount of sugar in your muscles and letting them get in there a day or two ahead of time can be really, really powerful. You also don't want to have all that bulk in your stomach. That's why I think a lot of people are drawn to the goos, is because it doesn't fill you up, right? Like you're not having a big pasta dinner or something. You're not having a bunch of roughage. So if you're optimizing health the majority of the time, you are getting all the nutrients that you need to refuel your muscles to recover correctly, then you can afford, you know, like 3 or 4 days of going higher carb, focusing on the things that make your stomach feel good. Cause that's a big part of racing, right? Just like, especially if you're doing endurance type events, you don't want biological mechanisms to kick in and like draw you to the toilet in the middle of competition, right? Like that's a big problem. So fueling with the things that you feel good with is really important, and upping the carbs with clean ones, like, boiled potatoes can be really easy to digest and just get through. You doing stuff like that around competition time can definitely help.
Yeah. But like you, we've got a couple questions coming in here. Yeah, so I see them coming in. So we'll get through them here in just a second. But, I think, overall, really good points with that. I think that a lot of times what happens is people try to make up for a crappy diet. Mm-hmm. When they're not competing, by having some sort of like elaborate race day strategy, right, to try to make up for it. And so I think a lot of times people don't realize that, like, when you eat right, when you eat good, you know, clean, natural, the way that we were meant to eat most of the time, because, you know, even in your book, you say, like, you know, you get, you know, 90%, you can fudge a little bit here and there. Yeah. You know, everybody likes their Oreo cookies here and there. That's my weakness. Don't put those things in the house, man. I know they're a chemical bomb, but I don't freaking care, man. Those things are so good. But anyways, if you're eating good most of the time, then one, you're going to have an idea of what to eat on race day. Cause like you said, race day is not the day to experiment. Like, you should know what you can eat on race day, because it's just an extension of how you live your life. Like, you should know. And also in training, you should be experimenting with foods ahead of race day. Like, you know, mm-hmm. how that's going to affect you. It's just gonna give you, so you know, you'll know that, and they're just kind of an extension of what you already do, rather than trying to look at race day as some separate thing.
And let me just add to that real quickly. It's a good idea to kind of simulate race day and refeed with carbs on a somewhat regular basis, right? You don't want to be super low carb all the time. You want to be training by simulating competition every once in a while.
What do you mean, Abel? Seriously? You mean training should look like what you do in your sport?
So,
come on.
This I know, it's ridiculous.
I thought we were supposed to ride road bikes and wait a minute, to get better at racing mountain bikes, I should actually go out and practice my racing strategies? Okay. This is news to me, man. No, I'm sorry. I totally agree with you. It's so funny to hear you say it, because coming from the outside looking in, it seems so obvious. But then you look at what the way most mountain bikers approach training, and it's like, what are you training for? That looks nothing like what you're actually doing in your sport. So sorry, I didn't mean to jump in there. It was so funny to hear you say that, because I say that all the time to people.
And one of the biggest things I learned about that too was coming to all of this as a professional musician. You know, the musicians who were just sitting there in the corner, when I first started, I wasn't really focusing on the show. I wasn't focusing on the competition, right? I was just focusing on technical skills and how to nail each piece or whatever. When you go out there and you're actually performing, the best performers are the ones who do it all the time. The ones who are interacting with the crowd, the ones who are focusing on the competition, getting better at the competition, right? So same thing goes with the way that you train, the way that you race. You kind of need to sometimes focus on improving your skills, getting faster, getting better. And then other times you're all right, I'm doing this and I'm aiming for this time and I'm going to do it really well. And I'm pretending that it is the competition, right?
Yes.
You said, no surprises. You want to know exactly what you're doing on the days that you're racing.
Yeah, exactly. Right on. So I'm going to get to these questions here. But I got to throw out, anytime I get a chance to throw out a Musashi quote, I like it, man. Have you read the Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto Musashi? Have you heard of Musashi?
I've heard,
Okay, there's badasses and then there's Musashi, right? I mean, that dude, you read his biography, man, and it's just mind-bending. What that guy did was able to, the level he was able to take his art. But his book, he basically realized I'm either the luckiest guy alive or there's something different about the way I do it. And so he meditates in a cave and writes the Book of Five Rings. But one of the things that he talks about is how you fight is just an extension of how you train. And how you train is just an extension of how you live. And once you start to see the connecting threads between those three things, then all of a sudden this stuff starts to make a whole lot more sense. And it's a lot easier than when we're constantly trying to Frankenstein's monster stuff and think about our life and our training and our competitions as separate entities. Mm-hmm. So cool. All right. So I got some questions there. I know you got to go here. We got about 10 more minutes. Cool. All right. So I want to make sure I get to these questions. And again,
lightning round. Yeah. We'll
probably have to do this again sometime, because there's always stuff.
Yeah, that'll be fun, man.
So Douglas has got a few questions. So, anti-inflammatory diet is good. What if you have inflammation now? How do you accelerate to a healthy state? So, it sounds like he's looking for some nutritional tips on trying to get himself to a healthy inflammation state.
Yeah. Okay. So I see that Douglas has a few questions here. So I'm going to try to put all of those in kind of the same answer, because anti-inflammatory applies to a lot of this different stuff you're asking about. What's your position on gluten, organic versus non-organic? Everyone is different in terms of what they can eat, but certain things are pretty much unequivocally bad for everyone. And that includes modern processed foods of any kind, really. And so modern wheat is actually, it's touted as a health food, but it's a super processed food. And one of the things that one of the ways I explain it is basically when it comes to wheat and a lot of the other foods that we're eating today, we started with a wolf and we bred it into a chihuahua, but we still call it the same thing. And so the wheat that we're eating today has nothing to do with what, our parents were eating, our grandparents were eating. It's a fundamentally different food that was bred for ease of transport. That's hyper processed. It's not fermented. So it rips up your gut generally going down. And, some people can tolerate it better than others, but almost everyone can benefit from an inflammation standpoint by getting rid of it. So cutting out those junk carbs. And then if you need, there's another question about a high metabolism that came from Douglas too. Nice. So if you do have a high metabolism, I think of it as you can afford to eat more carbs than other people can. You can down potatoes, you can down rice, you can even down sugar, although it's, there's a performance pro and con of that, right? It's like the high octane stuff. It's the nitrous oxide. It's going to be revving you up really, really high. You don't want to become addicted to it, reliant upon it. So going for those cleaner carbs is usually a lot better. And it's better from an inflammation standpoint too, because if you're inflamed chronically, you're not going to be recovering as well. Because every time you go out and you do intense training, you are basically cueing your whole body to become inflamed, to build muscle and repair it. And you want that recovery to be basically whittling down that inflammation as much as you can. So focusing on an anti-inflammatory diet, staying away from pretty much all processed foods. And, you know, the wild diet is basically, it's not dogmatic. It's not all that prescriptive. It's all about getting fresh food. We know what good food is when we see it. Fresh stuff. It should be perishable. It shouldn't be covered in a bunch of artificial chemicals, MSG, other stuff. So look out for the bad stuff, dodge it, and focus on going anti-inflammatory. I just saw LeBron James drop like 15, 20 pounds, it looked like, from his pictures, because he basically did just that. You know, he went for kind of like a paleo approach. But when you focus on real food, when you focus on food quality instead of quantity and all of that, your body responds really well. You drop that inflammation, which allows you to drop water weight, and you recover a lot more quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think that in a nutshell, people would just pay more attention to the quality of the food that they put in their mouths. And I like in the book, you made the statement, like, don't say I can't have that. Say right. I choose not to have that, or I don't eat that. Like, that's just not what I do. I don't fuel myself with that. And I think that mentality is really, really helpful. So, all right, I'm going to erase a couple of these so we can, let's see, we did the high metabolism one, position on gluten. Man, Douglas has got all sorts. Blood testing, what stats are important and not so important? Got any opinions on that?
Yeah, for sure. C-reactive protein is a measure of inflammation throughout the body. That's one that a lot of people don't pay attention to, but they should. Blood sugar is a lot more important than blood pressure for a lot of people. So one of the things, I actually have one right over there. I look at my body's response. I prick my finger and you know, when I'm fasting, I check out where I'm at. If I do exercise, I check out where I'm at. And then if I eat certain foods, I want to see if it's throwing everything out of whack. And if it is, it's like, all right, that, you know, a baked potato, for example, has double the effect on your blood sugar as a boiled potato. So little things like that, when you actually see it on the numbers, you're like, oh, wow, like that makes a freaking huge difference. So blood testing, let's see what else. You can test food sensitivities, which kind of goes with the anti-inflammatory thing, with certain tests. One's from True Health Labs, IgG, IgE, food allergy and food sensitivity testing is a really good one. There are a bunch of other ones, but basically go for like the naturopathic type doctor approach to a lot of this stuff. A lot of chiropractors will allow you to test some really cool things that you can take action on.
Yeah. Excellent. Right on. Cool. So, let's see, Pedro here, 47 years old and a mountain biker. And wants to know if the wild diet applies for all ages. I'll say it applies for all ages. You even have a section on kids, and this is where you really got me, dude. You got a section on for dogs, man, for your pets. And that was where I was like, this dude is man after my own heart. I got a dog that is my bosom buddy that goes everywhere with me. And I had a puppy that was going through, like,
just got up when you said that. That's so hilarious.
But it was going, then this is several years ago, and I was living in Hawaii, but it was like losing its fur and like really unhealthy. And the vet told us, like, man, the crap and the food is bad. And so we actually started cooking and making food, and it cleared it up. So anyway, sorry, that's beside the point. But so 47, is it apply to all ages? That's a pretty softball question, but what do you think, Abel?
But yeah, this is meant for optimizing health pretty much across the board. And in terms of like my show, my podcast, Fat Burning Man, and a lot of the other people who like buy my books and whatever, the vast majority of people are over 40. And I just wrote an article today, actually, on the blog that you can check out at fatburningman.com that talks about how to do this specifically if you are over 40. So yeah, a lot of people catch up with this stuff when it's more important, when it's more obvious that they're slowing down or putting on weight or whatever. So the earlier you catch it, the better, but it definitely works really well, especially if you are over 40.
Yeah. No doubt. Any opinions on organic versus non-organic food? I know you're kind of with the inflammation stuff, but I guess you actually had a section in your book that and what's it called? It was the Clean 15.
Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen. Yeah. So a general rule to follow is most conventional crops are sprayed a lot with chemicals and pesticides. None of that stuff is good for you. There's a lot of, you know, misinformation out there about that, but if you can afford organic, go for it as much as you possibly can. But if avocado, for example, is a good example of one that you can buy conventional because it's got this kind of like hard outer shell. And so if they spray the outside of it, you don't eat the outside of it, then that's all right. But for something like an apple, if they spray that, you're pretty much getting all those pesticides and toxins. So if it has an outer shell, then you can skip organic if money is an issue for you. And then the ones that have the exposed skin that's edible, those ones you want to go organic.
Cool. Excellent. And then people can Google the Clean 15 or Dirty Dozen, or better yet, buy the Wild Diet book.
Sure.
And, you got that list in there. So anything on food cravings? Douglas says he tends to overload on nuts. Do you read anything into particular food cravings?
Yeah, nuts are super easy to overeat for a lot of people. Mostly because if you think about it, you know, around the holidays, you might see that basket of nuts where you actually have to crack them, open them one at a time. That's the way that we should be eating nuts.
Right.
But when you have like handfuls of stuff and you have nut butter and whatever, it's super easy to go overboard. So yeah, a general rule though is that anytime you eat a food and then you want more of it, that's kind of a bad sign, right? So people have trigger foods, right? Like you said, the cookies or whatever. And some people have that with nuts or whatever. I have it with popcorn a lot of the time. So if you eat a food and immediately you want to keep eating it, you want to eat more and more and more, that's a good one to not work into your daily habits. Like try to keep that down. And one way you can do that, if you're out on a ride or if you're, you know, just out working your job or something like that, you can take a little bit of nuts, but just have like a serving size, right? Don't bring the whole thing because then you're just going to eat the whole thing. So that's one way to get around it. Just don't have it around you and you won't be able to overeat that stuff.
All right. Now, I like that though. If you have like a craving, you eat it and you still keep craving, it's probably not a good one to throw and they're on a daily basis. So any advantages of purchasing the Wild Diet in written format versus the audio book? I mean, I'll personally say, unless you want to listen to all of the awesome recipes that you have in there, then there's a little advantage to buying the book because you have how many different recipes?
It's got like 50 plus, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not just a, you know, there's it's a lifestyle and philosophy book, but there's a very large practical portion to it. But any other thoughts on someone investing in your written versus audio book?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like the smell and the feel of actual books. You can use that as a recipe book. The audiobook is super fun. If you like audiobooks and you like, I've been a performer for a long time. So like I really put my heart into it and it's super fun. And then also at fatburningman.com, I have a bunch of like interactive programs. We have an online membership community where we do a lot of video and audio based stuff. So if you want multimedia, I have tons of free stuff there. And then I have some premium stuff too. So check that out.
Excellent. Right on. All right. So, real quick, do you address women's dietary needs in your book?
There's a whole section on how to do this in particular, if you're a woman and what to pay attention to in the book. Same thing for men because it is slightly different for sure.
Yeah. It's like 95%+ the same. There's just a few details that you address. I thought you did a really like the fasting and some people do better on higher carbs. So there are a couple specific recommendations. So last one, and then I'll let you get out of here. And I'm saving this one because this one's a mountain biker's question for sure. Living mostly paleo, but I enjoy my beer. What's your stance on beer and other alcohol?
I enjoy a good beer from time to time. I'm definitely going to get behind that and say it. It's one of the good things about being a mountain biker or someone who's involved in endurance activity. It basically revs up your metabolism. Like I said, you can dispose of more carbs than other people can. So if you love a good beer, have a good beer and enjoy it. But there's a huge difference between like crap beer that that most people drink, that domestic stuff, compared to the artisan beer. So don't go out and enjoy beer by having like a six pack of the stuff that doesn't taste that good. Go out and get the really good stuff and enjoy it. And you're going to take a slight performance hit. You know what? It might affect recovery or whatever. But one of the biggest advantages of doing all this as a lifestyle is that it's more important to enjoy it and reward yourself with the things that you love than it is to shave off like 2 seconds from your time every once in a while. So just ask yourself why you're doing it. And then if you want to drop fat, if you want to bump up your performance for like periods of time, then cutting alcohol is something that I use as a strategy. Like I'll go a month or two without it, but usually I'll have it one or two times a week. The easiest way to do it is just say, okay, it's the weekend. It's Friday or Saturday night. I can have alcohol if I want to.
Yeah, excellent. No, you had that shirt on your side. I complimented John. It says I'm 87% paleo. The rest is for cigars and scotch. So
that's right.
I guess you can insert beer and Oreo cookies instead of cigars and scotch. But as long as we're getting mostly there.
That's right, man.
Then we're there. So excellent. Hey, well, man, I really appreciate it. I know I got to let you go. You got a busy schedule. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your day to come and join us and chat with us today and answer some questions. And
yeah, man,
it's really cool, man. So again, you guys can check him out at fatburningman.com. And I just want to point out real quick, like Fat Burning Man, like burning fat for fuel is a performance thing. Looking good is almost a side effect. And
right.
And so the stuff that you're talking about isn't just for aesthetics and looks. It's like when you are the fat burning man, yeah, you're going to look hot, but you're going to perform so much better as well.
Yeah.
And so that's the idea. It's funny. My daughter's all like, she's like, Daddy, I'm trying to burn fat for fuel. Like she's read some of this stuff and she's all like,
oh, that's so cute.
Sugar and like, oh my God. And she's 10 years old. And I have to tell people because she's really skinny and she's really fit. You know, and I have to explain to people, she's not worried about getting fat.
Yeah.
She wants to perform well. And I think that a lot of times people get hung up, they hear like fat burning man, and it's like, oh, well, I'm not worried about burning fat. And it's like, but you want to perform well. So go check out Abel, go check out his site at fatburningman.com, check out his podcast, check out his book, The Wild Diet, and you'll be a better person for it. So,
And you're coming, your interview or where we talk is coming up, I think, in 1 week. So, listen to that because it's a super fun one. I think you guys are going to
like it. Yeah, yeah. No, that was a good one, man. That was awesome too. So cool. I'll let you go. Any parting words for us, Abel?
No, I just want to say thank you for listening. And there's a big part of this that's no pain, no gain. You have to be hungry and miserable in order to make this work. Not true. You can enjoy this. Go back to being like doing what you love. Get on that bike because you love to do it, not because someone's like slapping shoes on you and making you go fast. Like do it because you love it. You'll be able to do it forever and just go out there and enjoy yourself, man.
Enjoy yourself. Yeah, that's a good one, man. I think we forget that fun is supposed to, adults know how to take the fun out of everything.
Exactly.
So we need to stop that. Cool. All right. Well, once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. You guys can check me out at bikejames.com. And it's been Abel James with Fat Burning Man at fatburningman.com. And we are out of here.